Okay, welcome back. And we have added to the images under Dr. Keller's name in guests the letter we mentioned. You heard him mention there was a 2-page letter written to Gray Barker and from Augie. It's right there, Augie Roberts, July 24th, 1958.
Yes, Jeff, August C. Roberts is the key to understanding the Valiant Thor mystery.
All right.
And I've seen other documents where I base a lot of the information that I have. I have 24 pages about Valiant Thor and Venus Rising. And then in the Rockets to Venus, I have 6 pages. But I've kept some information back because August C. Roberts produced a document. It's 15 pages long. And
about Val?
Yes, and it was his eyewitness observation and photographs on that day out at the Highbridge Farm. And he didn't have permission, and he states in the letter he was sent as a correspondent by Gray Barker to photograph and report on the event, but he didn't have the permission of Valiant Thor, Vice Commander Don, Tanya, or Jill to take the pictures or write anything about them being from Venus. But he went ahead and did it anyway. So I'm just pondering right now what I'm going to do with it.
All right. First of all, thank you, Augie Roberts, up above, wherever you are looking down on us, for taking those pictures, or we would have virtually nothing on Valiant Thor. Frank Strange's, I don't know that he ever took any pictures. If he did, he didn't publish any. Tell me, that event on that farm that day, and many of you have seen that. If you look up Valiant Thor, you'll see pictures. They're at an outdoor event. It's daytime. They're black and white photos. August Roberts took those pictures, or we wouldn't know anything about what Valiant Thor looks like, really. I don't know any others. Do you have more photos? Do more exist, or did he just take those 4 people?
No, I have some others.
Oh, my. And does he look the same in the others?
Yes. Yes,
same,
he does.
Was it the same day?
Yes, it was the same day, and they were taking pictures of all the attendees at the Highbridge Flying Saucer Club meeting.
It was
like an organizing meeting, and I have the flyer for announcing it, and with the address and the parking and the whole kit and caboodle.
And that what day would that have been? What was the date of the meeting?
That was in 1958. Valiant Thor was in the Pentagon for 3 years, from 1957 to 1960. And he had heard that. This is according to Frank Strange, that he had heard that that Howard Menger was going to be doing a presentation. So he wanted permission to leave there. Not that he needed permission, because he could precipitate through a
right.
bulkhead if he
yes.
wanted to.
Right. That's what I understand. If you enter, for those of you interested in this and don't know anything about it yet, Valiant, V-A-L-I-A-N-T, Valiant Thor, T-H-O-R, and you can just punch that up on any search engine. And if you want to go to Google and hit images, you'll see on the top row, actually it's the first picture of Valiant Thor, his vice commander, and the two female. Like, it was a very famous photo in ufology, and you can
Tanya's
find it.
The one that's covering her in the most well-known photo. It's Tanya, who's the communications officer, and she's covering her face. And then the blonde-haired woman is Jill.
All right, I'm trying
they're
to. I wonder.
They're all Venusians.
Yeah. Well, this has been colorized, the photo, to the extent that Val Thor is clearly colorized. Why are all these pictures of JFK on this page? I don't understand that. There's a whole lot of pictures of John Kennedy, Lyndon Johnson, and the assassination. It must be some link there. Valiant. I don't know. Okay. There's another picture of Val Thor, I guess that day, from his right side of his face, or the photo's been flipped, I can't tell which. And there's a close-up. Well, that's the most famous picture. There, you'll see three people in it. Val is reading from something, and the guy on his right is looking at him, and then there's the blonde lady further to the left. And
Noted to be speaking in a click language similar to the San people in South Africa.
Now, there is a color. Oh, there's an original color picture here. I stand corrected. The colorized version is very well done, but there is actually a full-blown color picture with the vice commander in the middle, and the lady on his left is in a blue sweater. And the blonde lady is nearest to the camera. She would be on his right. I have not seen that picture before. Valiant Thor is not in that picture. He's probably off to the right side a bit. But that's a color picture.
Does it have two little girls on chairs that are...
No, let me see here. Okay, that's a wide shot. I see what's happened. They've taken that wide shot of the event in color and cropped it. So you get a close-up view. There are two little kids. There's a table and a chair to the right, and then the three principals I'm talking about are to the left, and there's Valiant Thor with his head down looking at that piece of paper. Okay.
Yes. I've got that paper.
Paper?
I have his notes, and
those are Valiant Thor's notes that he's reading.
Yeah,
and you have those?
I have his notes. Yeah.
Wow.
And let me take a look at this here. Some of the stuff it says on here. Something. Springard Renew TV Show R.E. Menger. And then an arrow is chicken. Radio different than TV. Wife of Venusian. Now, EXP-book wrote or something. It's hard to read this writing. But,
that's okay.
But I've got his notes, and they're one, two, oh, then there's some with some kind of cryptic language, three.
Well, are you position to share those? If you wanted, you could send images of them, copyrighted, and we could post them.
Eight. There's eight pages.
Well, the cryptic language would be interesting to see.
It kind of looks like shorthand.
Mm-hmm.
But well, I'm not a graphoanalyst. But
No. I'm looking, I'm counting. There's the one wide shot of the whole group, or most of the whole group, with a table and a chair in the center of the group, and the people on the right, people on the left. People on the left, Val Thor, and the other three Venusians with him. And then there are, it looks like I can count 1, 2, 3, 4 different pictures were taken with Val Thor in them. Maybe 5 on this images page, but all at the same event. I don't see any pictures of him away from that.
Are you looking at the one where they're seated around two trees that are arching over each other?
I only see the one. Let me see here. Yes, I see the two trees.
Oh, okay.
That's a black and white.
Right, a group shot.
That's a black and white of the left side of the group that's gathered around the table. The left group is on there on the left side. And Valiant Thor, I think, is almost cropped out of that picture. That's a black and white, but there is a color, and that's an original color picture. Sure looks like it to me. Okay, now, let's, for our listeners out there who are scratching their heads, who is this Val Thor? Let's give him a little bit of a quick biographical sketch, if you would, Ray.
Yes, Valiant Thor was sent by a science council on Venus to come to the Earth to persuade the leaders to halt the nuclear arms proliferation and the arms race. And he landed outside of Alexandria, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Came down in a cloaked ship, and then after it decloaked, then he was escorted by some police officers to Washington, D.C., from Alexandria across the bridge, and taken directly to the White House, where he was brought to a subterranean level, where he actually did meet with President Eisenhower and presented him with what we would recognize today as being a kind of, laptop or a tablet of some kind for translation, so that the president could see what life was like on Venus and, answer any questions that he had in the English language. The tablet could tell him what he needed to know about Venus. But Valiant Thor was there for 3 years, and he didn't accomplish anything. But the mothership stayed in orbit, and I monitor. I write in the book about how this satellite was identified. This mothership was identified as being a satellite even before the Sputnik went up, and there were three other satellites that were identified going around the Earth, and then in 1960, after Valiant Thor went back up, the mothership stayed around for about a year. That was the Victory One mothership, and then it was reported as throughout the world, different observation posts and military posts and radar stations, they were tracking what was called the Black Knight, and this was a Venusian mothership. And so all the details, all the technical details and everything are in the Venus book.
Wow.
In Venus Rising.
Got it. How, I don't want you to disclose any secrets, but how did you come to own Valiant Thor's notes in that picture of the day at the meeting at the farm?
Well,
you don't have to tell me if it's on the QT stuff.
As a journalist, I wouldn't want to reveal the.
Don't. That's fine. Leave it. All right, you got them. If you can share them, we'd love to see them at some point. Especially the page with the cryptic notations on it. That would be fun for somebody who knows that kind of code breaking, who could go into that and look at it. Okay, well, so where we are now is what you're suggesting, Ray, and is that there has been an enormous effort at misdirection, very successful effort at misdirection by NASA, by the government, by the military, by the military-industrial complex, to keep virtually all attention away from Venus in terms of it being a habitable planet. We're looking at Moon, we're looking at Mars, we're scratching our heads about Pluto and Ceres. Nobody's talking about Venus. Is this the elephant in the living room?
Yes, it is. It is the elephant in the living room, and in the rockets to Venus, I detailed the operation of J. Edgar Hoover and the counterintelligence program, and I have actual FBI documents where they monitored George Adamski particularly, and do my best in the book to vindicate George Adamski, but what I could say is that whenever Adamski would appear at a flying saucer club, like in Detroit or out on the East Coast and in New Jersey or somewhere, there would be probably as many FBI agents as newspaper reporters or other, you know, representatives from other groups there that were taking notes. And what worried Director Hoover was that Adamski and Truman Bethlehem and the other contactees, Howard Menger, they were reporting a society with great potential, what we could be, a utopian world beyond imagination. And it just smacked of communism to Hoover. And, you know, George Adamski was born in Poland.
Huh. Uh-huh.
And, well, it's now part of Hungary, the part that he was born in. But he came to the United States when he was 3 years old. But not only the contactees, but science fiction writers like Isaac Asimov.
They were tracked as well,
they were writing
huh?
about yeah. these worlds with great potential.
Mm-hmm.
And they were worried about it. They thought that, that the Venusians must be reds, you know. That Venus is the real red planet, not Mars. So that's what the big thing was. That's what the big thing was all about. But from my experience, I would have to say that it's not so much that the Venusians care whether we believe in them or not, but do we believe in ourselves? Because we can have a world like they have on Venus with all the wonders and marvels that it is.
But the bad guys won't allow it, Ray. That's not their game.
Right. Their vested interests are just keeping that mushroom principle in effect.
Wow. Let me take a moment and thank Frank Chile for putting this program together. Again, Frank has, I've given him one day a month, and he always comes through with some remarkable people, none more remarkable than Dr. Ray Keller we're talking with right now. Frank, if you would, send all those pictures over to James if we can post them. I'd like to let our guests have a look at these because it's very unusual, to say the least. Okay. Now, you made an interesting statement, and I was going to say something similar in a speculative vein, that Valiant Thor, his mission was a complete failure. And part of that was because of this communist paranoia, apparently, as the story goes, that was infesting J. Edgar Hoover and many others as well. And not without good reason. The communists were our enemies. There are many who suggest now that communists and Marxists and Bolsheviks are still very much present and pushing harder than ever to get back into this country and take it down. So I'm not here to say it isn't true or it is, but it's something we do report on often here. What do you have to say about that? How else did Valiant Thor represent? Now, this would have been in Frank Strange's book. The life on Venus, how many people, what do we know about it? Tell me more.
Oh yes. Well, we learned that Venus exists in several dimensions. In the third dimension, there are vast cities, factories, housing areas, in lava tubes underneath the surface. And in space, there are various colonies all throughout the solar system and beyond. They use hollowed-out asteroids from the asteroid belt, and they position them around planets as radio relay stations position them at a certain angle from a planet so that when it's on the other side of the sun, they can still communicate with it. But the people live in beautiful cities, and they don't want for anything. even if it's a space habitat. And another contactee of the day, Orfeo Angelucci out in California, he was originally from New Jersey, but he wrote about, he's the expert on space habitats.
Hmm.
And so we have this knowledge of what life could be, and they've certainly set a good example. They've set the bar high, so they believe in us, but so we believe in ourselves.
Well,
I wouldn't say Valiant Thor was his mission was exactly a failure, because later on, and I do detail this in the book, the various treaties that were arrived at for non-proliferation of nuclear weapons by enacted some by President Kennedy, and then later in other administrations, the drafting of those and the groundwork, as well as the first initial protocols, and I reference those and have footnotes for those for contact with extraterrestrial civilizations,
right,
all took place around like 1966, about you know, 6 years after Valiant Thor left. So it gave people a little bit in authority, a little bit of time to think about these things.
Apparently, the non-proliferation treaties never went anywhere either. We got nukes all over the place.
Oh, yes, and that, of course, that's worrisome to the Mnuchins. I covered the Project A-119. It was a secret project to actually detonate nuclear weapons on the far side of the moon.
Yeah.
The Mnuchins have space bases there, and so naturally, you know, they wish somebody would ask them first before sending any armaments into space.
Well, yeah, they may have a long wait. We've got lots of weapons in space, more all the time. It's not
Jeff,
a secret.
It was that Carl Sagan is the one that was on that project. He was a team member and a designer on that project to nuke the moon.
Well, that was one of the nuttier things we've heard people plan on doing, but yeah, I remember it. Hold on a second, Ray, if you would. We have to pause again, and we'll come right back and continue a fascinating conversation. Okay, and we're back, Dr. Raymond Keller. This is fascinating, and we're going to put up momentarily under Dr. Keller's name, under where you'll see books and photos and stuff. Click on that, and you'll be able to see pictures of Valiant Thor. He looked like a Hollywood movie star, and it is said during the 3 years he was in the Pentagon, he never aged. They have a different agenda there as far as senescence goes and the slow wind down of life. Very interesting pictures. Obviously, very unusual individuals. They didn't look normal. Oh, they looked just like us, but they looked too good. They looked perfect and fascinating. So I'll have those pictures up momentarily for you. All right, Ray, back to it.
Yes. Well, so I'm glad you were able to get that letter up there from the...
The letter's up there, too.
From Mr. Roberts, because he explains a lot about, in that letter, about the group and the situation, the situation there. And also that, you know, interviewing Connie and taking her picture and everything. So I'm glad that that one's up there.
Now, did you? I got a picture from someone who claims that it was a ship. It's a picture of a flying saucer that Valiant Thor was on board. Have you ever seen that picture?
Let's see.
Frank has it. We'll get it to
you. Okay.
Yeah.
All righty.
That may be something of great interest to you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, there's some writing on the back of it by the person who took the picture, and it was circa 1958, 59-ish, 60, right around in there. So, okay. Now, Valiant Thor, according to Frank Strange's, gave it his best and wasn't getting anywhere. We're getting into the 1960. The Cold War is getting hot. It's just really ramped up. Everyone's trying to build a bigger thermonuclear weapon. ICBMs are the talk of the trades. That was the beginning of the worst and most dangerous time probably in modern history, although some would argue we're getting close to duplicating that again now. We have the Cuban Missile Crisis a couple of years ahead after Valiant Thor left. And that was very close to a thermonuclear war. What is the general sense of when he left, what his goodbyes were? Did he have any kind of portentous statements that he left with people when he departed?
No, he returned to do his report to the Science Council on Venus, and there were other emissaries that were sent to other powers as well, Russia, China, and they went home as well to present.
So his group
report.
Was just one group that was sent here to contact this particular government.
Yes, that okay. is correct. And while he was here, he did contribute some knowledge as far as space medicine goes and living in space that would be of value to any astronauts that we would send in the future. But he refused to have anything to do with
military
the militarization
stuff,
yeah. of space in mm-hmm. particular.
Mm-hmm. All right. I was going to do something here. Let me see if I can do this real quick. I want to just for fun, see what... there it is. Let's see what Wikipedia has to say about Venus.
Okay.
Venus is the second planet from the sun, orbiting every 224.7 Earth days. It has the longest rotation period, 243 days, of any planet in the solar system, and it rotates in the opposite direction to most of the other planets. It has no natural satellites, no moons. There is, of course, debate about whether or not our moon is natural, but that's another story. It is named after the Roman goddess of love and beauty. It is the second brightest natural object in the night sky after the moon, reaching an apparent magnitude of -4.6, bright enough to cast shadows at night and rarely visible to the naked eye in broad daylight. Blah, 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 blah. Venus is a terrestrial planet and is sometimes called Earth's sister planet, as you mentioned earlier, because of their similar size, mass, proximity to the sun, and bulk composition. It is radically different from Earth in other respects. It has, now here we go, the most dense atmosphere of the four terrestrial planets, consisting of more than 96% carbon dioxide. The atmospheric pressure at the planet's surface is 92 times that of the Earth, or roughly the pressure of found under 3,000 feet of water in the ocean, which would crush you.
Well, the one thing, Jeff, that about all that is now with our Kepler probe, and as we begin to discover thousands of other planets around other suns,
exoplanets,
other solar systems, and so forth. we're beginning to rethink this whole idea of about what life is and what conditions it could exist in. For example, on Earth, at the bottom of the ocean, there are volcanic vents with temperatures 700, 800 degrees, with organisms swimming around happily and, you know, under tremendous pressures. The Mariana Trench, you know, 2 miles deep under under the ocean.
12,000 feet almost.
So, you know, our definition of life, maybe we need to expand that a little bit.
We're so egocentric, it's embarrassing.
It doesn't have to be life as we know it.
Of course. NASA also claims that the surface temperature on Venus is approximately 863 degrees Fahrenheit. Water boils at 212. Think about it. It just doesn't make any sense. Something's going on. Yeah, this is. I've not gotten into this like this before, but clearly the potential for a massive cover-up and misdirection away from Venus is on the table. It's right here.
I call it the Venus conspiracy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's real. Because why else would the Soviets, of the 40 or so probes that they've sent into space, why would more than 30 of them be directed to Venus when we're sending ours willy-nilly in every direction?
Nobody knows the answer. Nobody even knows that they sent that many. Fascinating. 75% of their space mission effort, approximately, was designed to put probes at or on Venus. Why? And if Venus is inhabited, there would clearly be some kind of, you would think, electromagnetic energy being emanated from that location. I'm not saying broadcast like TV and radio, but there would be some readout, which suggests another cover-up, if there is. If there's life out there, go ahead.
Yes, is that cover-up that you're referring to about the radio frequencies? Venus is the only planet that has dual resonant frequencies at 221.23 hertz and 409.1 hertz, and it actually sounds like singing. You can tune it in with a radio, and some have speculated that certain humans their DNA can be sparked or activated with these resonant frequencies, and this isn't a new theory either. It goes all the way back to the Sufis. Rumi in the 13th century, the Sufi poet and theologian, he said that there were 4,000 angels on the earth at any one time, and he said that they communicate through the activation of sound waves.
What are the frequencies again, please, Ray?
Those were two. Let me get those again. It was 221.
0.7?
Yeah, 221.23 hertz.
0.23.
And 409.1 hertz.
All right.
And it's the only planet that actually has two, and they're constant.
What if you dial that up on a radio with an antenna? Do you get any kind of special static?
Yes, as a matter of fact, back in 1955 at the Naval Observatory and also the University of Ohio, Ohio State University at Columbus, they were directed by President Eisenhower to, they had picked up signals that sounded like intelligent transmissions, and they were at that time doing a survey of Jupiter and the red spot and radio noise coming off of Jupiter, and President Eisenhower directed them to switch over to Venus, that it was a high priority. And I have headlines from the newspaper in Chicago, I think it's the Chicago Tribune, banner headlines about intelligence signals detected on Venus. It's very exciting information. And I put it in the book, and even Donald E. Kehoe was curious about that and speculated on it in an article in True Magazine.
Okay, True Magazine. There was another fun one. You can find old copies of those magazines. There were a lot of Argosy, True. There were a bunch of them.
Oh, yes, and a lot of people don't know it, that Otto Binder, science fiction writer and comic book writer, he created over 200 comic book characters, including the Legion of Superheroes, Supergirl, and so forth. But he actually wrote 5 books about flying saucers, including one about Ted Owens, the famous psychokinetic man who could move things with his mind, and he had all these amazing powers to predict earthquakes and tornadoes and such. And he got that after he was zapped by a ray from a Venusian scout craft.
Huh.
That had intelligent insects on board, bees.
Well, all I can say is we're lurching toward our own demise here unless something incredible happens. And I've always hoped for something like the day the Earth stood still. Unless we get an ultimatum, Ray, I don't think we have a chance. The evil that has its hands on the control mechanism on this planet is not going to release it. Not unless they're forced to somehow. That's
yes,
my view.
I think you're so right about that, Jeff. In fact, I did an article for the Alternate Perceptions, and it was about a gentleman who was a retired, a jack of all trades, a railroad worker, and a lumberjack, and he had an encounter with a Venusian craft that landed on the beach in Washington State. And it was taken aboard the ship for some 40 hours. And Kenneth Arnold and his wife, Doris, investigated and believed the gentleman. His name was Thompson. And and he was told that it would be probably the year 10,000 before avatars like Jesus or other great teachers, Buddha, and that would come back to bother with trying to get through to us.
Hope they don't wait that long. That's 8,000 years away. We're not going to be here then. This will be a burned out cinder by then.
Just a smoking ash heap.
Wow.
I think you're so right.
Okay. Well, we have now... are more photos going up? Oh, there's a bunch of them. Oh, good. Okay. If you scroll down, those of you who are listening intently, click on the link below, Ray, and you'll go to the photos and bio page. Go down below the letter, then you'll see a black and white picture, and then you will see the black and white picture, by the way. You can only see the shoulder of Valiant Thor on the right. Then the other three members of his crew are there. Don't laugh. Go look. And then this is 1958. Then the next picture is an enlargement of the color picture below it, showing Valiant Thor looking down at... It looks like some kind of a newspaper folded up, and he's writing on it. I'm not sure if the woman is... covering her face as much as she's shielding her eyes from the sun. See, the sun is right smack on her face, so she may be just doing that rather than hiding.
Oh, yeah, that's Tanya there.
Very good. Okay. And then there's a shot from the other side, and it looks like Val is sitting in Tanya's chair. I don't see Tanya there. And then there's a single shot of Val. Then there's a craft, a scout craft, that Adamski, it looks like an Adamski, quote, craft, end quote, but it's supposed to be a craft of Valiant Thor's, I guess, his group. That's an old picture. That's a real picture.
Yes, that looks like the scout ship Miss Madeline over in Maryland, right before, just a couple weeks before George Adamski passed away in 1965.
Yeah, did you get the picture from Frank?
Well, I'm looking at it right now on the page.
Right. Okay. Well, that is. It says these were taken by Adamski and Madeline Rutherford in February 1965, and they claim it was one of Valiant Thor's people's craft. Madeline Rutherford.
Oh yes, yeah, that's indeed what it looks like.
Well, all right. There's another one for you to think about. It also looks rather like some of the German craft of 20 years earlier, in the early 40s.
The Hanabau.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, very good. We just have a couple minutes left. What would you like to talk about that we haven't gotten to? You've got tons of stuff. Anything in particular?
If you're interested in getting any of these Venus books, they're all on Amazon.com, and they're all fully illustrated. They're award-winning books. They're fully footnoted. Anything that I write in there, you could check it out for yourself.
Wow. Very nice. I would really like to see some of the pictures that came back showing the Venusian surface. That would be fascinating. If you can maybe send them over to Frank, and he can. I don't know if they're embargoed, quarantined, or what, but that would be fun to see. They never really were pushed around much. I don't recall seeing them in the media. It's like they were, if they were released at all, it was here today, gone tomorrow. They didn't stick.
Yes, the manipulation of news and blocking of critical information about Venus is a crying shame.
Well, it seems like it's a big crying shame at that. Back to your black and white photos with a white shape in the center of it. What are we looking at there?
Okay, that's what John A. Keel said was a transmogrification. Mm-hmm. And Connie Menger herself explained about light forms in the October 1959 issue of Fantastic Universe, although it was a science fiction magazine. Mm-hmm. And Howard told her not to write the story, but she pleaded with him. And there's a picture there of a Venusian scout craft passing through what I call Dimension X.
That orb, it's not an orb. It looks like a flying saucer. It's flat on the bottom and rounded on the top. So that's a scout craft?
Yes, that's a scout craft.
Okay.
The scout craft can operate along lines of electromagnetic force within the
ley lines,
within the atmospheres of planets or in the vicinity of motherships that generate their own electromagnetic fields, but they can't operate on their own for long distances in space, be a certain range beyond.
So they're unmanned. They're unmanned. Correct.
The scout ships are manned, but they don't need a large crew any more than four.
Well, that's not a very big item, from what it looks like
no.
in the picture.
Yeah, it's not too big. And then they have observation patrol craft, Venusian observation rangers, and then they have the carrier ships, which travel between planets and also between star systems, and they operate on neutron pulse engines.
Hmm.
They're powered by an element that we created, a trans-uranium element that we just discovered here on Earth. We call it californium. They call it cytherium.
Hmm. was funny. Okay, the date of the meeting on the farm, again, where these pictures came from, the color pictures especially fascinating, and the black and whites. What day was that?
That was in 1958.
Mm-hmm. Close enough.
It was before July 24th. That's when August C. Roberts wrote that letter. I'll have to find the exact date, and I'll send it to Frank.
Very good. Well, thank you, Dr. Keller. This has been really fun and very informative. And I will be thinking more about Venus than I probably ever have. I want to know more about what those probes found up there. And maybe we can get into that at some point. If you want to put together some pictures, some data, we can certainly do another program about that. I'd like to present that to everyone.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff. I really appreciate the opportunity of reaching out to your listening audience, and I understand that it's approaching a million, if not exceeding a million.
Oh, who knows? But they're wonderful people. We do know that. And they are smart, and they're listening. They're considering. They don't shut the door on anything, really. That's what this is all about. So, Dr. Raymond Keller, you're invited to come back if you'd like. We can do a more specific program on Venus, perhaps highlighting the probes and whatever data they were able to get that we were able to have access to. I'm suggesting, of course, they kept a lot of it very quiet. So, sounds like it.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Take care, Ray. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Okay. All right. We'll try and put that together for you, because this is interesting. I've always wondered why nobody talks about Venus, and you hit that wall, and it says, well, it's carbon dioxide, and it's 900 degrees or whatever it is. No one could live there. Too many atmospheres of pressure. You'd be crushed like a ripe tomato under a boot. Forget it. Not necessarily the case at all. How interesting. All right. Be right back with more in a minute.